Welcome to this week's episode of Nevada Backcountry. Shout out to Shooting Performance Institute for being a show sponsor. Go to shootingperformanceinstitute.com. Check out the upcoming courses. I don't know that Jim has any more long range courses coming up, but I know he's got some handgun stuff later this month. So go check that out. A little bit of housekeeping to get to, Dave.
Yeah.
We always tend to focus on the doom and gloom when it comes to sheep. I don't know what that is. We always talk about the pneumonia issues, the die-offs, this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, the lack of finding big ones.
Yep.
Seeing a lot of smaller ones, lack of big ones. So, yeah, we're always kind of...
doom and gloom. I don't know what that is.
I don't know why we do that.
But there have been some absolutely phenomenal rams that have hit the dirt this year.
Yeah.
Tina Wilson, a friend of ours from Winnemucca, she took a 170-something?
Yeah, California, 170 and some change, and it might be the buckle.
Absolutely incredible.
Just a pig. And then I've heard of a couple high 160s, 165s, 167s, Californians. So, yeah, some really nice animals have been taken this year. So
a testament to the management practices.
Yes.
So... Even though,
avoiding all of these issues that are happening with the sheep, I mean,
right.
Not only are some of the issues with pneumonia with sheep getting in with domestic sheep, but now wild sheep are passing pneumonia on with other wild sheep. So it's this conveyor belt of just issues.
Yeah. But I don't want to focus on that.
No, let's not focus on that.
Congrats to Tina Wilson. Man, 170. So, I mean, that is an absolutely incredible ram.
Yeah, she sent me some pictures. That's big animal.
When they start to get that big, they start to look like Rockies almost.
Yeah.
Where it's like, whoa.
Yeah,
that's just a California.
Oh
yeah.
Man, yeah, there's just so much horn. You're like, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, beautiful animals.
Congrats to everybody out there who's been successful harvesting a sheep this year. And like I said, shout out to Endow for doing what they have to do to manage the sheep herds adequately in the state. Like you said, it's always that kind of ebb and flow of like, oh, well, okay, this is a problem, but we got to do this. So what other housekeeping stuff, Dave?
Well, we got some, you still got some elk hunters out there right now. We're coming to the close of that particular season here. We got the...
what's left for big game stuff?
There's still some... late season archery, December, where there's some late season deer hunts going on. There's still some elk hunting going on, and then there's some sheep hunting still happening, some desert and some California, some stuff down south.
Okay.
So there's a little bit, but we're definitely getting towards the end of the big game season.
I think the latest are those, like I know 192 has one.
Yep.
Yeah, I believe
204?
Yeah, those late archery mule deer
area. Yeah, that one's a late. That's like second week of December type of thing. So yeah, some of those late season deer hunts.
I've seen higher quality animals. Now this is anecdotal through social media and everything, but this has been one of the better seasons for big game animals in the state.
Antler growth on some of these muleys that we're seeing on social media. I'm impressed. And then some of the elk that have come across our Instagram, and just a great antler year.
Yes.
Fantastic. And the animals, not only just antlers, but body condition looks fantastic.
Every picture I've seen, I know Hunter Morai killed a heck of a nice buck.
Fantastic animal.
Every picture of a mule deer I've seen has been a big bodied, healthy looking mule deer.
Yeah.
Not just antler wise, but man, what a good season. What a terrible season for me to not draw a big game tag.
Just besides the antelope, that was it for us. And next year's our year.
That'll be the year.
Give us some good water, and we'll be taking a picture with one of those big pigs of an animal.
Where do you want to go as far as this show? We're going to get into the field report. Dave just went out and got some chucker. I was hanging out at the house with strep throat.
Gotta thanks love those kids, those walking Petri dishes. Gotta love that.
And here's a pro tip for everybody listening. Don't be stubborn. If you feel sick for 2 weeks like I did and you're not getting better, maybe you want to go get it checked out.
Yeah.
Not just sit around coming into the office, talking into a microphone going, man, my throat's really sore. I wonder what's going on.
Right. Yeah. Bourbon doesn't fix that.
No,
or a nice scotch.
I mean, I'm not saying it's bad.
You know, you're like, oh, this is my elixir. It makes my throat feel better. So I'll be good. If it persists that long, yeah, you might want to
get it checked out, especially as this goes to air. I am in Canada hunting right now.
Yeah, you will be.
We're recording a little bit ahead of schedule. And that was kind of the final straw. I was like, you know what? I'm getting on a plane. I'm going hunting.
And nothing's stopping
me. And nothing. Like, I got to go get this checked out.
So are you living in like a wall tent in the backyard right now?
Prepping?
Prepping and making sure you're not around the kids and getting sick before you leave. Like,
no, I'm rolling the dice.
You're just going for it. You're like, all right, babe, just.
I can suffer if necessary.
Yeah.
I'm not going to preemptively suffer just to prepare for a trip. I'm good. I'll do the fireplace, my wife's hot toddies, you know, which again, I tried to cure myself with those. Yeah, but, didn't do the trick.
Well, you got to try again.
It was worth it.
I mean, you got to build the data to make sure.
Didn't work the first
trends.
20 times.
Well, it's okay. You still got to keep gathering that data, but pack away some Theraflus and, you know, NyQuil and whatever else you have to have on the trip so that you can at least get through it. Numb yourself while you're hunting.
And it looks like I can. I know we said we weren't going to talk about the election on the show, but it looks like I can book the return flight now.
Yes.
I can come back from Canada. No, I'm
kidding. Well, no, you'll be able to come back. I hope, you know, some of the folks that have sworn to leave our country, if he was reelected, I mean, they might take your seat, which is fine.
Yeah. Don't let the door hit you.
Right. You know, that's your choice. Have a good day. But, let's get into some of the chucker. I mean, I've gotten out twice now, and it's been pretty darn awesome.
Yep.
A lot of birds, a lot of chattering going on. And, you know, I was really curious because I was up there, and I had a couple folks that were up there hunting as well and kind of ran into them and got to talking about our guns, you know, and obviously our dogs and just
typical
just
hunter stuff.
Typical hunter stuff.
What are you shooting?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And it just brought to attention, like, what are some of the most popular shotguns out there, brands and stuff for hunting, as well as gauges. I know I've got a buddy who swears by 28 gauge.
Oh.
Like, that's his jam.
Can he shoot?
I mean,
careful, he might hear this.
Yeah, right. You know, he can shoot. I mean, I don't think he's ever shot more birds than I have. And I use a 12 gauge. I use a pointer 12 gauge, as well as talk about this in a bit, but I just purchased a 20 gauge Benelli 20 gauge, which, you know, I've had,
Dave's on the 20 gauge bus.
Well, my kids use the 20 gauge and I've used their youth 20 gauge a few times, and it's a small gun, and so it's just kind of weird.
Nice to carry.
Yeah, it's like a 6'5" guy, you know, dating a 4'11".
Feels
foot
like
11.
A toy.
Right, it's a toy. Yeah. So I was like, well, I got to pull the pin here, and luckily my father-in-law handed me a Benelli 20 gauge still in the box with the receipt taped on. He's like, yeah, I'll never be bird hunting again because, you know, he's bad knees, bad back, all kinds of stuff. So he's like, here, why don't you use this? And I was like, okay. But yeah, what would possess you to say, like, whoa, I got to use a 28 gauge when those shells are four times the cost?
Oh, yeah.
Man, is a 16 gauge or a 20 gauge or a 28 gauge that much better or better performance? I mean, what's the draw?
I know two guys that hunt waterfowl with a 28 gauge. But that's why I asked if your buddy was a good shot, because the two guys I know that swear by the 28 gauge are absolute assassins with a shotgun.
Oh my God. I could not imagine waterfowl with a 28 gauge because those shells are like $60 a box.
Oh yeah. Well, if you're like me and you got to shoot two boxes to get your birds, 28 gauge is not cutting it.
No.
If you are like either of the guys I know, they'll have, you know, they get their seven birds with seven shells and not a shot more. It's always funny to me, like I said, small sample size, but the guys I know that are religious 28 gauge guys, they are absolutely lights out with a shotgun.
Well,
and so I always just make the joke that I haven't graduated to a 28 gauge yet. I'm still stuck in 20 gauge land. I probably am stuck in 12 gauge land.
I love my 12. It is the most popular shotgun gauge out there for,
well, absolutely,
for waterfowl and for upland. 20 gauge pretty close behind it. And a lot of the literature I've read, a lot of that is based on the cost of shells.
Absolutely.
You know, 12 and 20 are relatively close in price, yep, for a box of shells. Then you get into 16s. So I got another buddy who swears by his over and under 16. That's all he hunts with.
I like a 16 gauge.
It's a nice gun. I just, my thing is like, what is the performance variation between the 16 and a 20 when you're spending 2 and 3 times the amount for the shells? I mean, is there that big of a difference that warrants?
Well, let's talk about that. I'm looking at the clock. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll lay out the case for the 16 gauge.
All right.
And price is not one of the pro column
no.
check marks.
Yes.
And we are back on Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. We left off at the end of that last segment, Dave, and you were asking about the 16 gauge.
Yes.
I've got a really old Winchester Model 12 16 gauge.
Oh, nice.
The big thing that guys liked about the 16 gauge was you could get heavier loads, similar to like a 12 gauge, as far as many pellets as you're throwing out.
Yeah, and you can get up to 1 ounce of,
ounce and an eighth of pellets in there.
Oh, wow.
They were traditionally built on a smaller frame. So it was like carrying a 20 gauge. They were built off a 20 gauge frame, but you had the power of a 12 gauge.
Okay.
So for upland guys, it was like the perfect balance of, this is a light little gun,
yeah,
but I'm still throwing a crap load of pellets out there at birds. The thing that killed the 16 gauge was when they developed shooting classes for shotgun sports, they never made a class for the 16 gauge. It was either 12 gauges or quote unquote sub gauges. Even though it's similar to a 12 gauge, it's still not throwing as much lead as a 12 gauge. Why handicap yourself?
Yeah.
Because the sub gauges, you're talking 20 and down. 16 existed in this weird gray, like no man's land, where it was like, if you're shooting a 16, you got to bump up to the 12 gauge class. Well, who wants to compete against 12 gauges with a 16 gauge?
Right.
So the way America set up their sporting,
killed the 16.
Killed the 16.
Okay.
So the only guys that stuck with 16s are your diehard upland guys who are like, hey, I want to throw a bunch of lead, but I don't want to carry an 8-pound shotgun in the hills. You'll still come across them. And believe me, mine's well worn. I like it for chucker because it doesn't have a trigger disconnect. So if you hold down the trigger and pump it,
It just goes.
You're ripping rounds out there.
So
you get into a covey of birds, and I'll hold down that trigger and just start pumping like a madman. So it's, you know, I'm just cooking.
You're just causing all kinds of discontent.
But like you said, I got away from it. I shoot a Benelli 20 gauge strictly because if I wind up in Winnemucca, and I forget shells, or I do my typical thing. I shoot through everything I've got and I still want to get birds. I can go to a Walmart and find 20 gauge.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not finding 16.
No, that's what I like about the 12 and the 20. Like my pointer 12 gauge that I've used for the last few years for chuckers, it's not a light gun, but it's not a heavy one. So it's kind of that in between.
Yep.
It's really nice. I'll tell you, when I took that Benelli 20 out of the box and built it and got it all dialed in, like when I texted you, like, you know, what choke are you using, that type of thing, I was like, wow, this is really light.
Yeah.
This is a really, really nice gun. So,
You killed birds with it.
Yeah,
so,
and I feel bad, though, like, putting my pointer away. It's like, you know, it's one of those things. But, you know, my waterfowl gun is a 870 mag.
Okay.
It holds a 3.5-inch shell. That thing's like carrying around like a cinder block. You're waterfowl hunting. You're not hiking 5.5 miles.
But for upland stuff, I like the 20 gauge, man.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Now, the next question would be, you know, you've got four classes of shotguns. You've got your side-by-side, you've got your over and under, you have your semi-auto, and then you have your pump. You're a pump guy.
No, semi-auto.
Semi-auto.
Well, I mean, I've got a, let's see, do I have?
You have the pump because you got the 12. You got the.
Yeah, I've got a pump shotgun, that Winchester Model 12. I've got mostly just use semi-automatic stuff. Back when I didn't have two nickels to rub together, I had one shotgun.
Oh, yeah, same here.
And
870 Wingmaster.
I killed a lot of stuff with it.
Yeah.
Because it was my shotgun. I just got dialed over years of shooting it.
Yeah.
Since I've become moderately more successful in life at earning money, I've got a bunch of shotguns. And guess what? I have a hard time hitting stuff now.
Oh, dude.
Because I'm like, well, I'm going to grab this for this and this for this and this for this.
Yeah, you start customizing stuff like that's my chucker gun.
Yep.
That's
yep.
my duck gun. That's my hun gun. That's this gun. That's my dove gun. Like you said, mine was a
Model 870 Wingmaster. Yeah. That was the gun
no
to have.
Choke. You had to change the barrel. So I had two barrels for it, the full choke and the improved cylinder barrel. That's all I needed. And I just
swatted
stuff all over. Well, I don't know about how much. I threw a lot of pellets on the ground over the years. But yeah, so now gone to the 20th. But I was reading that for competition, over and under is the way to go.
Yeah, like I think just skeet, about everybody. Yeah,
right, for skeet and for five stand and stuff, over and under. It's becoming more popular now for upland bird hunting are these over and unders. You got two shots.
Oh, yeah.
That's all you got. You know, there's this kind of a change or a swing going. I don't know if it's because the guys got in trouble by their wives because they just spent $8,000 on an over and under.
I got to use it.
Oh, geez, I better use it.
Yeah.
So,
have you ever shot a side-by-side?
Yes, once.
Okay.
And I'll never do it again. It was a 10 gauge.
Oh, Dave.
It was a really bad idea.
Yeah.
We were hunting geese and friends like, dude, you got to try this. It's my grandpa's gun. It's this thing's awesome. I didn't look at it. He just, you know,
should have buried it with your grandpa.
Right. He handed it to me. I didn't even think like, oh, I wonder what gauge it is. Yeah. You know, your brain goes straight to like, oh, it's an old 12 gauge. This thing's going to be sweet. I pulled the trigger on that thing, and I think my shoulder ended up somewhere near my butt.
Instant regret.
It was done.
Yeah.
And that's the only side-by-side double barrel I've ever shot.
I will tell you, if I could afford to a nice side-by-side in 20 gauge, I would hunt with that exclusively.
Really?
And I couldn't figure out, I'm the odd man out. I actually shoot better with a side-by-side. And then Rick Carter down the hall there,
he's like super.
He's Mr. Shotgun.
Yeah, that's competition. He's crazy about it all.
Side-by-sides have a wider sighting plane because the barrels are next to each other.
Okay, I was going to ask next, what's
why
the
I shoot. Yeah, well, I couldn't figure it out. It was like, you know, I like shooting side-by-sides. I hit stuff with them. He was explaining that because of that wider sighting plane, your brain and the object moving, it kind of syncs them up a little better.
Oh, okay.
But like I said, if I could afford to, I would hunt with one of those. But on the Henry budget, I got a semi-automatic 20 gauge.
No, I'm
that
fine
works.
With semi-auto. Because I was always curious, like when the gun club was open up there over near Toll Brothers, South Reno.
Oh, the Sage Hill. Yeah, yeah.
Me and a couple friends were members there, and we would always do their leagues and their all of this stuff. And two of my buddies, when they take on something new, they're the type that it's either they tackle it at 100% or they don't do it at all. So once they got into it, and they're like, "Dude, let's start competing up here at the gun club," and they got into all that stuff. You know, next thing you know, they've got, you know, $22,000 side-by-sides. Over and unders. Like custom.
That's a car.
Like custom built to their shoulder.
Oh,
the whole nine.
Yep,
I mean, they went to the place and they like measured them and the whole 9 yards. And that's when I was like, well, what's, because I would see individuals shooting, you know, over and unders and then side-by-side. And I was like, what's the difference?
I think traditionally the side-by-side was a field gun and the over-under was a competition gun.
Okay. We would do the five stand and then we would do the course, the shooting format. I just totally.
Sporting clays?
Yes, sporting clays.
We'd
do the sporting clays and you would see individuals shifting between over and under and the side-by-side.
Well, they had two guns that go back and forth?
Yeah, because I think, so when I kind of researched a little bit of it, the over and under, it had to do with like the weight of the gun and the recoil. So an over and under's recoil will be centered because the barrels are aligned.
That makes
sense.
So
you'll have, you'll have a little easier recoil, softer recoil from what the literature I read states. Where on a side-by-side, your recoil is either going to push left or right, depending on which trigger you pull and what barrel goes off.
Oh.
So you're going to have rougher recoil with a side-by-side. You know, I wasn't really sure that I couldn't find anything in the literature in relation to accuracy or why they would use the side-by-side more often on the course and the over and under on like the five stand. But hunting-wise, the over and under is becoming more popular, becoming a more popular gun. I don't know if that's because if you don't shoot it, if you don't hit it in two shots, you shouldn't probably continue. You don't do a Henry.
But I like the that third, fourth, and
fifth or sixth.
Makes me feel good.
Hey, Henry, that last shot, it was like 120 yards out. Well, magic BB, baby.
We call that the FU shot. Yeah. Like, I spent all day hiking up here, and now you're 100 yards. Hey, FU, boom.
Yeah. So it's just, it's with the new Benelli I just acquired. It's like, well, why people choose the guns they do. And then, like when I said, when I was coming off the hill, the two guys that I ran into both had over and unders.
Oh, they were over under guys. Okay.
Yeah. They both had over and unders. And I was like, oh, you know, what made you guys choose those guns?
What was their answer?
They just like felt they liked the guns a lot better. They were
not a lot of thought goes into shotgun fit. And I'm certainly not at that level, but I will tell you, there have been guns that I've pulled out of the safe to go shoot. And there is something to be said for just a gun that fits you and you shoot well. And knock on wood, that 20 gauge that I shoot, for whatever reason, I more often than not, I can hit stuff with it. I assume it has something to do with the way it fits me. It just comes up to my shoulder. Now, I didn't get fitted, none of that. But I will tell you, there are guns that I own, shotguns, that like, man, I couldn't hit you standing 20 yards away, and I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Well, and we can get into that here because we got to go on a break real quick. That is something else that I was looking into and reading about was fit. We'll get into that when we come back on Nevada Backcountry.
Hey, if you're just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, sponsored by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight. Before we went to break, and I was just starting to go off the rails there, and thanks for reeling me back in, Dave.
No problem. That's why I'm here.
I wasn't watching the time. We started to get into the fit of shotguns, and you made a great point over the break there that we put so much time.
Can you tell my wife that?
Oh, 100%. Gina? Dave is the smartest, best-looking guy I know.
In this room.
In the... Oh, shot so, across the bow.
Pow. Anyway. So
you brought up how much time, effort, and energy we put into fine-tuning the fit of our bows.
Yes.
And for some reason, there's like a mental block where I'll obsess over a quarter inch of draw length. Like, do I feel like I'm breaking it cleaner here or here? How long is my D loop? Where's the string touch my nose? With a shotgun, it's like I buy it, I take it out of the box.
And you shoot it.
And I shoot it.
Yeah.
You did a little research. It's critical to fit your shotgun to you.
Yeah, well, like when we were talking at break, you had mentioned how you have a few shotguns. And when you bring it up where you're going to shoot it, the bead is high on one gun and you bring it up on another one and it's in the sweet spot.
The gun I can't hit anything with, I got to pick my head up to see down the rib.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can't hit anything with it. The one I use, the 20 gauge Benelli, for whatever reason, how it came from the factory and saved me all the, that's because I'm built like a European man jokes. But I picked that one up. It's there. I'm looking right down the rib. I'm not changing my neck position. And that's the gun I hit stuff with. I probably should put a little more thought into shotgun fit.
Exactly. Because my friends that have those ridiculously expensive, like Honda Accord costing guns. You know, you look at those things and they've got these butt plates that are, they're all set on bolts and stuff and adjustments. And then they've got this piece that pops out of the stock that holds their jaw. It's nuts. And I always thought, man, what in the
world?
Why
are you doing that?
Now I understand that it's the fit. I mean, they're fitting it to their body, to their head, to their shoulder, to their arm length, all of that stuff. And I was curious, people out there, do any of you out there that are upland or waterfowl or just shotgun competitors, do you fit your gun to your shooting style or to your body physiology or, and stuff? I'm starting to realize that that's important. I mean, we do it like that. We do it with our bows. I don't understand why we are not doing it with our guns.
Most shotguns now come with those like shim kits.
Yes, yes.
Like they got a bunch of shims in there.
Yeah.
I don't know how they come from the factory.
Is that what that stuff is in the box?
Yeah, the shim, those horseshoe shaped deals.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I just thought that was extra parts when they were building it.
No. So that's to adjust like the comb angle or the stock angle and everything, bring it up, lower it. They're each at a slightly different wedge shape.
Well, that would make sense because like you were saying, you know, when you brought one gun up, the
beads way up high.
That's where you would put
Not on that one because that's an over-under.
So unless
you're bending wood or I don't know how you'd fix that one. Yeah. But with the semi-automatic plastic guns or even some with wood stocks, but they've got a gap in between the receiver or they're a wood butt stock attached to a metal receiver. They have those shim kits in there.
Oh, okay.
However they come, I'm assuming they just set them at neutral or something from like the Benelli factory.
Yeah, just a standard setting or something.
But again, it's that thing like maybe lightning just struck and it was like, oh, this is perfect. Like it just fits my body.
Yeah, like a lot of bows come straight out of the box at 29 inches.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, perfect. Okay. I can shoot this.
Yeah, you just gotta fix it. So
I think that might be what that is. I know some guys that use those shim things, but they take their shotgun out. And for people listening, hey, get in touch with it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they'll normally do it at like 20 yards and they'll put the tightest choke they've got in there and they shoulder the gun and shoot it without making any like body adjustments. And depending on where that tight full choke pattern goes, they'll adjust. It's called cast on or off, which way away from the face.
Oh, okay.
They'll play with those shims until they get it where they can just lift it, shoot, and the pattern's right where they want it.
Yeah.
So right, that's what aiming. That stuff's for. I've never done that.
I've never done it, but I think I'm going to because I'll tell you,
it's
there's
not a bad call.
No, because it is super frustrating when you are out there chucker hunting and. Or just hunting in general, and you spend all this time hiking, birds
just
get up.
Just miss.
And you miss.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, what's the deal? And
yep.
I wouldn't doubt if a good portion of that is due to the gun fit.
Yeah. Well, there's demystifying that, like my laments, hey, I can shoot this gun, but I can't shoot this gun.
Now, is there anybody out there, this is all for the listeners that are on today, are there any shops or places out there or individuals out there that do that kind of
shotgun fit
or just gun fitting, you know, that you can go to and bring your gear and they'll kind of set it up for you? You know, because I know you go to the archery shop, we'll go there or just my garage, my workshop, and you tune the bows and we're good to go. So, but I wonder if there's a place that you can go to. Like,
I got to imagine Capital City Gun Club down there in Carson.
Oh, okay.
I got to imagine they do it. I mean, this is just speculation. I haven't done it, but I'm assuming that they would do something like that.
Yeah.
I know Tommy Forbes that runs the gun room up there. He has forgotten more about shotguns than I'll ever know.
Okay.
So I'm sure if I talk to him, but then again, he probably loves seeing me because he's like, oh, got another one that doesn't shoot, huh?
Right.
Well, look what I got for you.
Look at this pretty one right here.
I bet this one will shoot better.
Yeah, I mean, years ago, Rodney Bullard was...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He ran the Sage Hill classes and training, and he did a lot of that stuff. I'd assume he'd be... You know, if he's still around somewhere, I'm not sure, but just kind of curious if there's somewhere. I get tired of listening to YouTubers.
Yeah.
Like, hey, how to do this? Yeah, don't do that.
You know, I'll pull a bow apart, But yeah, sometimes messing with guns, anything that explodes, I mean,
yeah, has it?
It's a controlled explosion in my hands.
Exactly.
I'm like, you know, somebody probably has got some education on this. I'll probably let them handle it.
Right. Yeah.
No. So, hey, click on the contact tab on the 991fmtalk.com website. Send us an email. Let us know if somebody in town does shotgun fittings and or just how crucial you think it is. Again, I have that probably just blank spot in my mind where I'm like, well, I shoot an IC choke, so I'm throwing like a big 20-plus-inch pattern out there. So I'm like, well, how crucial? It's not like a real precise instrument. But then again,
when I've you're also, missing,
yeah, you're I'll like, look wow, for any advantage.
I was 20 inches off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And all these years of hunting waterfowl and upland birds, it's like, how did I not address this years ago? You know, here I am now. I'm like, hey, wait, how does this correlates to this?
Yeah. Just like we'll fiddle with rifle scopes and adjust them to zero stuff. We'll fiddle with archery stuff. Like I said, I think that's the only answer I can come up with. Is that because you're throwing that big pattern, guys just assume like, well, it's close enough. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. It's good.
Which it's not. You've hunted birds with me and that pattern, yeah, it doesn't save
has
me.
Has failed me.
That
shotgun shell's got a gap. I know it does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the other. Yeah.
It's got a pellet gap.
Yep. No, yeah. Guys will get super into that patterning guns. It's another thing I don't do unless I'm turkey hunting. Yeah. But when we come back on the show, let's get into some common chucker loads as far as what guys are shooting shell-wise, charge-wise, pellet size-wise. And then let's get into the never-ending debate of chokes for upland stuff.
Yes.
I come down on the side of most people are way over-choked, shooting too tight of a pattern, especially for something like chucker. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back on Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. It is that time of year where your trees are taking a clobbering. Call Mike at Battleborn Tree Service. They will take care of your trees like they were their own. Battleborn Tree Service, a proud sponsor of Nevada Backcountry. Where we left off, we covered the shotgun fitment.
Yeah.
Started to get into the pattern stuff, and you made the joke about holes in a pattern, which I'm convinced there's a bird-sized hole in my pattern somewhere.
Yeah, they're there.
I've hunted with somebody that uses a full choke for everything. That's their go-to.
Oh, man.
I've hunted with guys who will shoot basically a cylinder choke, so like no constriction. Across the board, they all get birds, but I see more often than not guys getting kind of like the fitting thing. They'll get a shotgun, they take it out of the box. That's what they're running.
Yeah, whatever's in it.
Whatever's in it. And I will tell you, when I, years and years and years ago, when I started throwing an improved cylinder, so a pretty open choke, I started throwing that in there, and all of a sudden it was birds started falling out of the air. Yeah,
that's my favorite choke, is improved cylinder.
I shoot it for just about everything.
Yeah, same here. And it's actually improved cylinder's the most popular choke for chucker.
Oh, it is? Okay.
It is. If you get into dove and quail, it starts leaning more towards the modified.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You start seeing more from, you know, again, from the stuff that I've read about. The kicker is with some of these really, really, really high-end guns, there's like 9 chokes. Like the Benelli I got 3.
Perfect. That's all you need.
Yeah. I had the improved cylinder, modified, and full.
That's all it came with. Yeah, you're
good. That's all it came with.
Yep.
But, you know, some of these guns that friends have that shoot competitively, they've got like light modified, heavy modified.
Oh.
I mean, it just goes on and on.
Yeah.
And I think that right there would send me down a rabbit hole that I would not come out of.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. There's and how much of a choices. Difference?
I have no idea, and I don't want to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want to be like, oh, wait a second, I shot a little bit better with the light modified compared to the improved cylinder and the improved cylinder A or the, you know.
Yeah. Hey, so for people listening, what's the difference between a light modified and an improved cylinder?
Right. I don't know.
They sound like the same. Well, I'm sure there's probably if you ran like a micrometer or something, there's a few thousands of difference or something. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not there as far as shooting. We were texting about this, but I said, I'm pretty sure my improved cylinder is just welded in there.
Yeah, that's right. When I was asking you about that.
I don't think I've, once I realized, I think it was a modified that came in the gun and I shot it okay, but there were a few closer shots.
Oh yeah.
That I missed. And
I thought, tighter.
Yeah, I thought, well, that's kind of goofy. I switched over to an IC or an improved cylinder. And those closer shots, it was like, boom, there's a bird, perfect. Ever since then, I was like, that thing just lives in my gun now. I read one time that with non-toxic loads, with steel shot for waterfowl.
Yeah, steel or tungsten or bismuth.
Steel patterns a choke or two tighter because it doesn't compress like lead.
Oh.
So if it's, let's say,
that
I'm,
makes sense.
If I'm shooting like a an improved cylinder, it's going to pattern with steel waterfowl loads closer to like an improved modified, like a tighter choke. Oh. So that's why I got it in my head. This is just the perfect, if I'm shooting ducks with steel shot, it's giving me that longer range, more waterfowl type pattern.
Yeah, to get them, knock them down.
If I'm shooting up close for chucker or quail, that lead is opening up and I'm hitting close stuff.
Okay.
So
I've always worried with like the tighter chokes, a full choke or modified, especially full.
Yeah.
Unless I'm hunting turkey or something.
Well, yeah. But different animal. Yeah.
When you do hit a bird, a chucker, a quail, a teal with a full choke, if
it's
you're
gonna be shot to hell.
Oh man, and you go to try to process and you're like, there's nothing left of the breast or anything. So that's always been my concern. Is like if I get a really good shot on the animal, which is probably one in every 30
at
shots.
15 yards at 15 or something. Yards,
you're turning the thing inside out.
Well,
so
part of that too, and this is where I wanted to go with the conversation next, was what are you shooting for chucker load wise?
I shoot a 6.
Same
shoot,
here.
Yeah, 6, yep. And I carry 7s as well.
Okay.
If I'm getting birds that are, you know, a little closer.
I'll
throw 7s in there. If they're not busting out on me or something, I'll put some 7s in there.
Okay.
But usually, chucker, I'm a 6 guy. And then if I'm hunting dove, it's 8.
Yeah.
And then 7s all day long for quail. 7, 7.5s for quail.
Because I was going to say, I'm exactly like you. I shoot, I think it's 7/8 of an ounce.
Yes, 7/8 of an ounce too.
With 6s. That's what I shoot for chucker. Until about December, end of December, after Christmas, when those birds have been pressured and now they're getting
jumping up further.
I'll shoot 5s.
Oh, okay.
But I have mistakenly, you know, you end the season, you hang the vest up, you're like, oh, I'm done. I have started the next season with the same shells in the vest.
Oh, so you got 5s in there.
And I've clobbered birds at, especially hunting over a pointer, where they're getting up at 10 yards, 15 yards. I've unloaded on birds at like 10 yards.
Oh.
And with those 5s, it, like you said, turns them inside out.
Oh, it just,
where
it's just
like,
a
man,
big ball
I can't
of
eat this. What in the world?
Yeah.
So I'm like you. I like those 6s up until about the end of the year. And then situation dependent, you know, if I'm starting to see birds getting up at that 25, 30 yard mark, it's like, all right, I switched to 5s, but I just got to remember, take them out, put those away.
Put them away.
Because it is a sledgehammer on close birds, even with an IC.
Yeah, it just messes them up. But that's kind of my
6s across the board. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What about for waterfowl? What are you shooting?
Waterfowl, depending on what I'm targeting, if I'm just going for a bunch of greens, I'll use like a 4. If I'm goose hunting or something, I'll go to, I've used BB and I've used T-shot.
That's biggest, isn't it?
That's big. That's big. And that's like, if those geese aren't coming down and they're way up there, you know, I'll toss a 3-inch T in there and I'm like,
let's see what happens.
I'm going to do some sky busting here. I'm going to see what happens. Lead them by 3 feet or something and just let it go.
Are you just shooting steel? Or do you get into any of the bismuth?
I can't
tungsten?
Afford that stuff.
Okay.
I can't afford the bismuth or the tungsten at $40 a box or something. I just do steel.
So the guy we talked about that I know that shoots waterfowl, one of the two that shoots waterfowl, the 28, he swears by tungsten. And that's what he shoots, and he said it works every bit as good as the old days shooting lead. You're talking about 10, 11 bucks every time you pull the trigger.
Oh, yeah.
I don't hit enough to make that
tungsten 28, that's got to be 100 plus bucks a box.
Yes.
I'm not that good. But then I'll go and spend stupid amount of money on a dozen raw shafts.
For archery stuff.
That's kind of a double standard.
I think 2 years ago now, there's a company called Boss Shot Shells, and a couple years ago, they did like a Veterans Day super discount for veterans. You had to, you know, whatever, email your ID in, blah, blah, blah. I took advantage of it, and I bought a flat, so whatever, like 10 boxes.
I think it's 10 or 12.
10 boxes of that. Theirs is like a copper-plated bismuth.
Huh.
So it's not quite as dense as lead, but it's pretty dang close.
Yeah.
I have had to water swat cripples a lot less with those shells where I feel like you shoot them, they die, versus using that steel shot where maybe you get that crosser and you don't lead it quite enough, but the bird goes down and then it's doing the death pinwheel. It's like, all right, send another one. Poo.
Right.
I didn't have to do that much with those. Huh. I've still got some in 20 gauge. Shoot, if we get out for ducks, I'll let you shoot some of them.
Yeah.
That being said, if they don't do that kind of deal, that's a little too rich for my blood.
Yeah.
I can't shoot the other non-toxic stuff.
Yeah. And I'm just not good enough shot to where, like, your friend, when he goes out, he only takes 7 shells.
That's it. That's all he goes out with.
I'm like, I carried no less than 2 boxes.
Well, shoot, that is all we have got today for you folks. Give us a follow on social media, send us questions, comments, show topic suggestions, and thank you to Truck Envy on South Virginia Street here in Reno for sponsoring the show. Next week, we will be live again, and hopefully I am back from Canada with a moose. Stay tuned for Tom Gresham coming up next.